The following presentation is brought to you by The Realm Network.
The Bob Seska Show, presented by BubbleGenius.com. Broadcasting from Resistance Headquarters, relentlessly fighting back against the clown dictator and his regime of deplorables.
Never give up, never surrender.
This is The Bob Seska Show, presented by BubbleGenius.com.
From our nation's capital, it is Monday, September 10, and this is the Bob Seska Show, interviews from Earth One. My name is Bob. By the way, if you like what you hear, please consider supporting the show by subscribing to our bonus content here on our Patreon page. Go to BobSeska.com and click the all caps Patreon link just beneath the logo. Go do it now. Okay, today we'll talk with comedians Francis Collier and Angela Shelton, collectively known as Frangela. You probably heard them on the Stephanie Miller Show, as well as their podcast called The Final Word. And today, Frangela is debuting their all-new daytime talk show, Me Time with Frangela. Check your local listings for channels and airtime. Okay, here we go. Frangela, hello, how are you?
We're great. How are you today?
Good, good. Is this a good time?
Oh, it's the perfect time. What happened was we ordered a pizza, and then they gave us the wrong pizza. Then they brought back the right pizza. It's been a day, Bob.
Assholes.
So we ate the wrong pizza.
Where are you ordering pizzas from that they just can't get the order right?
Domino's, believe it or not. Which I don't think I've had forever.
Yeah. Well, that makes a lot of sense. I used to work for Domino's. I can tell you some horror stories.
Oh, yes, they don't care. Tell me why this piece of pizza is in my mouth.
That's right. Well, you're still eating the pizza, so I'll keep that to myself. Okay, well, you know, where do we begin? I guess, you know, first things first, and I've been talking to a lot of people, and obviously this is the biggest story of the week. What do you think about this anonymous guy or woman or whoever, group of people, like a large cabal of people who are trying to flummox Trump inside the administration?
Well, first of all, I have to start with, I think it's problematic and probably illegal, quite possibly treason, for people to be undermining the executive, no matter who it is.
Yeah.
Like, the idea that somebody would openly admit to countermanding or trying to stand in the way of what the president wants to do is a problem.
Yes.
You know, for me, number one. Although this president, I get, but the courageous and correct and legal thing to do, because what they're doing is actually, I don't know what the charge would be exactly, but it quite clearly, they are not elected officials, and they don't get to decide what the president does or doesn't do, that we didn't vote for them. So my feeling from the very beginning is, you do need to find out who this person and people are, and for a number of reasons, and if they had any real courage, and if they didn't care about, if they cared about this country and they didn't have a racist and classist agenda that they were more than happy to push through under this fool, then they would go across the street to Mueller's office or wherever and give him the information that they have that he needs. Now, but you know what, Bob? For me, listening to this whole situation, all I can think about is back in January of last year, 2017, January, February, all the conversations of we need to have adults in the room. Who are the adults? Who are the guardrails? And that people started to remember all the conversations. Oh, we're so happy to have Mattis in the room.
And Ivanka. They thought Ivanka and Melania were going to do that.
Exactly. Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, remember all of that. And I feel like this is an extension of that conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Because now that you've got your adults in the room, the adults are saying, he is off the rails. He is off his rocker. This is crazy town.
Yeah,
we thought adults in the room meant in the room. Adults in the room meant that there was somebody there to convince, monitor, and guide. But what they're admitting to is they can't do that. So instead, what their committee are acts of subterfuge.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's not cool.
Right.
But here's the thing. You can't have it both ways. Thank you. You can't ride both ends of the pony and go straight. Expect it to go straight, Bob.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, well, I mean, there are a lot of solid points of view as far as, who this person might be and whether, and again, I say person, but it could be an entire group of people. In fact, it's most likely an entire group of officials inside there. And I guess the opposite end of the spectrum on their existence and whether they should continue doing that is, seems to me as if like having someone standing between Trump and the nuclear football, even though we might disagree with their policy positions and so on, is probably not a bad idea ultimately. And I know that, you know, once again, that in and of itself, though, I mean, the counterpoint to all of that is, don't you think that, and this is, of course, goes right along with what you were saying, don't you think that that as a trend is also damaging to the presidency? Like we're normalizing the idea of undermining the presidency from within. Do you see that as a problem?
Absolutely. But also I have to say that we do have, one of the problems I have with this logic is, so this group or person, anonymous, is they're acting as the third rail, but we have two other rails that are supposed to be doing it and aren't. The judiciary and Congress.
Right.
And the more that person intervenes, the less that we are going to get out of those people. Because if you're stopping that bill from being signed, then Congress is, we can't hold them accountable for not showing up for it.
Exactly.
And they are allowing really messed up agendas to go through. So you let the Muslim ban go through, you let the kids be separated from their families, you let domestic violence abusers get guns, you'll do all of that, but suddenly then, now that it's getting to look like maybe you won't get another job after this.
That's right.
You know, that you're going to try to create this resume where I was working for you. Because what you're doing is actually treason. You are undermining the office of the executive. You are subverting legal processes for our elected officials. And I guarantee you, nobody would be happy about it if it was Obama. And we found out, that somebody from his staff was keeping bills off his desk.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, our heads would explode if that was the case. If there was someone, if there was some sort of Republican, let's say a pro-Trump Republican inside the Obama administration in 2015, we would go absolutely bananas. That's absolutely 100% true. Yeah.
Yeah. And here's my question. We have to ask ourselves, and Trump is making us ask ourselves, is it okay for the president to be just a figurehead?
Mm-hmm.
Just somebody we plop on top of America, like, you know, figures on a wedding cake.
If they use them that way, that would be the argument.
That's what I'm saying.
They're trying to ride both ends of the pony. They want to be all powerful when they want it and not when they don't. And I get that, but there's a way to address this. You can change the Constitution. In fact, the Bill of Rights, that's all amendments. If we want to curb presidential power, there is a procedure for doing that exists in our government. But see, we can't count on our Congress or our judiciary to do that.
Yeah.
And so I think that his presidency, one of the things it has exposed is the weakness within our Constitution. And I, for one, am still shocked. I really did believe it took more than faith in those institutions for them to survive. I didn't realize how shaky they actually are.
Right.
And what that says to me is that there's room here for a discussion of constitutional amendments that do things like, should any president have the authority to order a nuclear strike without having to go before anyone else?
Right.
That's right.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. I mean, obviously, we're going to have to face an entire series of reforms of the presidency, if not the entirety of the executive branch. In order to make sure that this doesn't happen again, because I can see the progression from, say, Dan Quayle to George W. Bush to Sarah Palin to Donald Trump. And we'd be lying to ourselves if we said there wasn't someone who was worse than Trump in the waiting right now, maybe an entire group of potential candidates all getting ready to run for the Republican nomination in 2024 or something like that.
How about Jared?
It can get worse than Trump. There's no doubt about that. Yep. So, all right.
Because he actually has an agenda that isn't just his ego, you know?
Yeah.
So I find it disturbing, and I also don't buy the, you know, we're here watching out for you mess. That's just a lie, you know? And it's laughable.
Right, right. So, I should clarify at this point that we're recording this show on Sunday because you're both shooting your new daytime talk show at the moment. Tell me about Me Time with Frangela, and when does this start? When can I start watching this? Because I'm dying to see this show. So I can't wait, and it's got to be really soon, right? Wink, wink.
Yes, it premieres tomorrow, in fact.
Yeah!
Hey,
that's what I meant.
44 different markets. Yeah. I think, are you in Hawaii?
Oh, not anymore. I am in our nation's capital now. I am in Washington, D.C.
I think it is in Hawaii. Yeah.
Oh, well, that's great.
Meantime, with Frangela.com.
and find out, see your local listings and see if it's on in your area. It's on in a lot of areas. And but it is a daytime talk that is fun, funny. We're bringing back laughter, Bob.
And we need it. We need it. We need it.
We need it. Exactly.
We need some lightness.
That's right. And, you know, those of you listening in who've never heard of Frangela, first of all, what's the matter with you? Why haven't you heard of Frangela? I mean, that's crazy. The second thing is, Frangela is two of the funniest people in the world, much less stand-up comedy, much less television, much less podcasting, and so on. So you're missing a lot if you even miss a little. So make sure you watch and check your local listings for Me Time with Frangela, because it all starts when this show goes live on Monday. Your show will have just aired, the first episode, right?
Yeah.
So how did this, this is basically like, you know, kind of like The View, but with you both, with Francis and Angela, and then, so you're having guests. What's the overall format? What's the show going to be like?
So yeah, what we do is we have experts on, you know, various topics, you know, and we talk about, there's no topic that we don't touch.
Yeah.
But it's, we also do polls and questions from our audience and viewers. So our viewers get to have an opportunity to be kind of like our third co-host and throw out their opinions as well. So that's what's fun about the show.
Yeah.
And then you, of course, get Angela and I's antics and stories and a little bit of craziness here and there too.
Yeah. So you would say it's kind of, it's kind of like Regis and Kathy Lee. In that sense, insofar as it's really built around your personalities, right? I mean, it's
exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Right. And so which one of you gets to be Regis? That's the dumb question.
I think I'm Regis.
I don't know.
We might trade off a little bit there, Bob.
That's right.
Yeah. I'm not sure.
You get to be Regis some days, Angela.
I think you might be. I don't know. I can't say who's Kelly.
Mm-hmm.
Right. You can alternate Regises. See, now, and you can use that as the title of the bit. We're alternating Regises today. I don't know. It's a Sunday. I'm a little bit drunk. No, I'm kidding about that too. But it sounds like it. So, you know, let's rewind all the way to the beginning and just assume that some of the people listening and have never heard of you and don't know your backstory and everything like that. How did you guys get together?
We met at Second City in Chicago. Angela is from Detroit and I'm from Chicago, and Angela is the only person in the history of Second City, the theater, you know, that, you know, birthed all of your favorite comedians, Saturday Night Live people.
Mm-hmm.
But Angela's the only person in the history of Second City to have done all the stages. And when she moved from Toronto to Chicago, she moved into my building. And we ran into each other on the stairs. And she was like, you want to go see a movie someday?
Wait a minute. Angela's from Canada?
No.
I was in the cast at Second City, Toronto.
Oh, I see. Okay. All right. Because when you said Toronto, I was like, I have this fascination with all things Canada. I'm just a big, I love Canada. I don't know why.
Really?
And so that would completely explain one of the reasons why I love you both so much, because one of you is from Canada. But I guess you're not, but the Toronto stage of Second City certainly applies. I think that will count as well as being Canadian. So
you put it in the plus bucket.
Right. I'm sorry. I interrupted too. Go. Continue, please.
So we went to a movie and we both, you know, started talking. The movie started and we started talking and we haven't stopped since. We've been best friends, I think, since that moment.
I mean, do you find that, obviously you've got to have a lot in common in terms of your comedy sensibility and so on, but it just in terms of your personalities, it seems like there's a lot of overlap. I mean, I've known like married couples who aren't as simpatico as Francis and Angela, and obviously it's implied in the collective name of your, you know, the comedy duo name, which is Frangela, is obviously a portmanteau of both your first names. Is that something that, I mean, do you spend a lot of time together when you're not working? I mean, how there's a real genuine friendship here, right?
Yeah, we're actually real life best friends, and I think that's one of the things I think people really are attracted to, is that our relationship is authentic. We're not putting on, you know, and at this point, you know, you're talking about 21 years of history.
Yeah.
You know, that's 21 years of, you know, ups, downs, and this was the maid of my maid of honor. She was there when my daughter was born.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the good times and the bad times. We've, you know, so you're talking about, you know, almost, I hate to say it this way, a quarter of a century of friendship and history being seen through the prism of a relationship. And I think that that's what comes back out in everything we do. If it's, you know, us addressing, you know, what's going on in politics or in pop culture.
Right. So let's go back to Second City for a second here. So this was 21 years ago. You both meet up at Second City in Chicago. What was the makeup of Second City there at that time? Who else was part of Second City in Chicago at that point?
Well, you had in your cast, you had Jack McBrayer.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You had
Martin Garcia, Jerry Minor. No, yeah. That was my Detroit cast. Jerry
right.
Minor. In Chicago, who else would, well, and I main stage, who else would people know? I mean, you know, we Frances has been at Second City in many ways since she was, like, in high school.
Yeah, I started at 15. So when I started at Second City, let's see, Farley was on stage. So
wow.
I would sell T-shirts and go upstairs and watch, you know, Chris Farley and Tim Meadows, Dave Pasquazi.
Wow.
You know, I would watch, you know, Nia Vardalos and her husband Ian, Colbert, of course, and Carell were up every night.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And so all those people were like my big brothers and sisters, you know.
Yeah.
And then when I was coming up, I came up with Rachel Dratch, Tina Fey, Amy Foley, Adam McKay. All of those people were my peers.
Wow, that's like a murderer's row group of comics at that point.
Yeah,
that's huge.
Yeah. So and here's the thing: those are the people you know. But the reality is that if you were at Second City, you are no slouch. So then you're talking about all the writers and producers that you've never heard of.
People you don't even think about.
Yeah,
like Alan Alda.
Yeah,
Second City.
Yeah,
that's true. Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
And the people come up, you know, with us, you know, it's just you couldn't be at Second City and not have a point of view, perspective, be able to write, you know, be dialed into the zeitgeist of what goes on in the world. And it's such an amazing training experience to come through that because it affects you for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
The people are always amazed at how we consume content, but we don't consume content because of, you know, what's going on today. We consume content and always have because that was the way we were trained to do.
Yeah, yeah. And so what gave you the idea of forming a comedy duo? I mean, in terms of stand-up, it's actually kind of a rare thing. And the fact that you have both made it for what, 20 years now, 21 years now as a comedy duo is a testament to obviously the comedy itself, but obviously your chemistry too. And that's a major, major factor. So many comedy duos last a couple of years and then each person goes their own way. And then usually one person emerges as the big breakout star and the other person gets holds a grudge against that person and it's ongoing feuding and venom between the two. But this is a case where it actually works. What was the, what was the impetus for you teaming up?
Well, the reason why we teamed up was because we like to talk to each other at the end of the day, you know, and tell each other what happened at, you know, during the day at work.
Yeah.
Basically gossiping about work. And what we realized was if we worked together, we could gossip all day long.
Exactly.
And there would be no impetus in between. There would be no issue in between. We could just start our day talking and then work all day, then go home, get on the phone and talk about our work day together. And we would both know what happened.
That's so great. That's great to have that kind of rapport too. So, I mean, what was like the first version, like Frangela 1.0, what were you guys doing as far as your show at that point? How did you guys start building your material from there?
Cartoon.
You tell them about the team.
Well, we had an animated series that was started on Oxygen and ended up being on Oxygen and BET called Hey Moni, that we wrote and improvised and had a lot of cool people on. And that was, I think, that's the first time we worked together professionally.
Yeah.
You know, we'd written things with other people, but that was the first time. So I played Moni, and she played my best friend, whose name was Yvette.
Okay, so it started out where you were playing characters. You were doing, like, character-driven stuff. Wow, okay, that's interesting.
But they were not that far from us, I would say.
No. But then, in terms of the live stuff, what happened was, I think the first things we were doing was sketch comedy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we did a sketch comedy, like, presentation, I think, for CBS or something like that. It was, like, the first time, and they wanted to know, who were we? And, you know, and people got us confused all the time. They'd be like, which one are you? You're Francis or Angela? I'd be like, how come she's a foot taller than me, Bob?
Right.
Foot.
I mean, did you run into that a lot where people are saying, okay, you're Frangela, which one's Francis, which one's Angela, and so on? Was there lots of confusion there? Did you run into that quite a bit?
Well, the reason why we became Frangela was because they couldn't, you know, tell who was who. So, but here's the thing. At this point, we don't care.
Right.
It's like, that's the reason why we have one name. Just call us both Frangela, because we both respond.
Right, right. And how did you end up landing on Frangela? Was that just something that happened naturally, or was that a name that you kind of sat down and just spent an evening brainstorming names for the duo?
Somebody said it by accident, like, because they were trying to say, couldn't figure out if it was Francis Angela or Frangela. And then we thought about it. And we did talk about it. We decided that Ansys sounded like a foot fungus.
That wouldn't have worked. What did you say? Ansys? No. Ansys. Yeah, that sounds terrible.
Ansys.
That sounds like a side effect from a pharmaceutical. It may cause nausea, vomiting, and ansys. It may also cause bleeding from the eyes. And yeah, it's just like, it's like the name of some weird... weird ailment. That's hilarious. Yeah, Ansys, I'm glad you went with Frangela. That has obviously worked so much better than Ansys.
Totally.
It's hilarious.
Totally.
I guess you would consider yourselves to be more improv and sketch oriented, or more in terms of stand up. Do you feel like you straddle both things, or is there more a drive toward the improv side of things?
Well, you know what? First, I would, if I were naming what we do, I would say we're social political satirists.
Oh, okay.
And that takes the form of, that can take any form. So if need be, we will be sketch writers and performers.
Mm-hmm.
If need be, we will do, you know, basically a format of stand-up, which basically is a two-person show.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? If need be, we are pundits, and we are offering up, you know, our opinions, you know, sitting down and what have you. So it takes the form, or radio, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it just, you know, depends on whatever format needs to be filled. What we realize is that, you know, it's just putting us in the vessel versus worrying about what the vessel is.
Right. Have you always been political?
Always. Well, no. That's not true. That's not true. Here's the thing. We've always been political as people.
Right.
Right.
But in terms of the act, we got more into politics, I'm going to say around 2007.
Yeah, that makes sense.
When we started doing, you know, our radio show on K-Talk.
Oh, right.
We love pop culture. So
how did that come about, the KTLK show?
we asked for it.
Oh, so you just went in and said, we want this show, and they said, okay, here's a show.
Well, literally, he's a hero of mine, Don, what's his last name?
Martin.
Don Martin, an amazing man. We got our agent to make an appointment, and they didn't understand why. You know, we were like, we want a radio show. And we went in and we said, hey, can we have a radio show? And talked to him for a little while. And he said, all right. And he gave us a try. He gave us, I think initially, did we start by filling in, or did we start with our own, the Saturday, Sunday?
I think we started by filling in.
Yeah, we filled in for some people. And then we
got our own Saturday and Sunday, you know, prime hours. I mean, Bob, as you know, from 11 to 1, I think, on Saturdays and Sundays.
Right.
Local. Had the best time, really loved doing it. And then we filled in, you know, we started filling in for
Stephanie.
Coming in on being on Stephanie and filling in for her and filling in for Randy Rhodes and filling in for, what's his name before his show, right when his show ended? Mark. But in any case, but basically, this is a good life lesson. Because this is a rule I live by, Francis will tell you this. I'm like, just ask.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? The worst that can happen is they say no, and then that's not like they say no and then take $50 from you. Like, you walk out with exactly what you walked in with.
Right.
So I'm always like, let's just ask.
Yeah, I mean, that's the, you know, the secret that a lot of people overlook, that you sometimes get what you ask for if you just ask for it in the first place.
We're both in, he's just not that into you. We asked. That was a part for one person. I just went in the room and the casting people, because we were both auditioning for it, and said, hey, can we do it together? And they went, okay. And then they let us do it together in the movie.
Right. So cool.
Like, people don't get it. I'm like, just ask.
Yeah, that's right. Well, that could be the title of your autobiography, your collective autobiography of Frangela. Just ask, the Frangela story.
Write it down now, Bob. Just ask.
You'll have to write the foreword then. You'll have to write the...
See, there you go. I'm all in. I'm all ready to go. So how did you end up hooking up with Stephanie Miller then?
So the station manager was like, well, he liked us, and he was like, you guys, you know, should we, you know...
They hooked it up. And then it became like a regular Friday thing, and then we started filling in.
When was that? How long have you been?
I think 2008. And then what happened was we had a little bit of a hiatus. We started, you know, touring and doing college shows, and we were gone, and we were on the road a lot. And then we came back about 2 years ago, right?
Yeah, I think about 2 years ago. Yeah.
Right. You know, it's interesting about the Stephanie Miller show, and I don't know if you experienced this as well, but... And I found out when I first started appearing on the show around 2013 or so, and then especially when I went in and sat in on the show in studio, it occurred to me that it's like a, and in the best possible way, I preface this by saying in the best possible way, it was like a group of space aliens who somehow we've all found each other here on Earth. And we're like, oh my God, they're my people. Look at my they're all here.
Stephanie Miller family. And in fact, it's a really good code word, sort of. It's like, if somebody, you know, writes to us, whatever, they're like, oh, I love Bob, and I love, you know, Jody Hamilton, and I love, you know, we go, oh, okay, you're cool. Right. Like,
it's kind of
we
its
don't
own...
have to worry about who that person is.
Right.
You know what I mean? Because, like, we know.
It's kind of its own subculture, in a way. The Stephanie Miller family.
And people are so supportive. And, like, I love the fact that, like, with the Sexy Liberal Tour, which you've been a part of, too, it's like, people come there, and they create community.
Yeah.
And support each other in these difficult days. And that means a lot. Like, we've just gotten so much support, even with this show starting, anytime with Frangela, from people from the Stephanie Miller family.
Yeah.
And people being like, we miss you on Fridays, but we can't wait to see your show. And it's just a lovely experience.
Mm-hmm.
There's a weird conglomeration of attitudes that exist in that show and within everybody who is a part of that show, I think. And that is this this combination of obviously liberal politics, comedy, morning radio, and then this weird line that we all draw when it comes to like PC culture. Like, for example, I think, you know, Stephanie Miller, I think she's even said herself that it's that she's too liberal for conservative listeners and too non-PC for the left. And so she's in this weird little niche for herself that obviously works extraordinarily well.
We enjoy the content and having the opportunity to be able to say what we really, really think. And I don't know if we've had another environment or opportunity to really put ourselves like wholly. I'm unedited in that environment.
Yes.
You know, there's sometimes, you know, in other situations, it's just not the proper place, time to talk about X, Y, or Z. Mm. But like in the Stephanie Miller, in that environment, everybody is just free.
Yeah, there's and there's
that's what I love about it.
There's something also about the show that is very, it's weirdly sexual, and it's empowering, I think. Well, seriously, it's empowering for the women on the show, where the men are typically treated like pieces of meat instead of the women, for a change. How about that?
Yeah, you know, I think that is a dynamic that Stephanie created, you know, and it's always been there, you know, when in every iteration of her, that's just kind of her personality. And basically, if I could curse, I would just say, you know, she takes no stuff. You know what I'm saying? Yeah.
Oh, you can totally curse on this show, by the way. You can say whatever you want.
Okay, okay, sure.
No need to censor. Okay, there you go.
And that's a really important and empowering place to be in. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And even though she's not a harasser, but what she's saying is that I have before we had the Me Too, moment in our culture, she was like, you know what? I'm gonna give it to you. You're going to come here, and it's basically the roles are going to be reversed.
See, that's so perfect, and that's something that that definitely sets the show apart, and it makes it different from any other liberal talk show that has existed, whether it's on terrestrial radio or not. I just feel like sometimes, and this is sort of the end cap to the Stephanie Miller portion of the conversation, that if more shows were like that, there would be more liberal talk radio, I feel like, and quite frankly, more shows like yours, which aren't afraid to be entertaining and funny. I think that's what's lacking, I think, a lot in terms of liberal personalities in the talk show realm, which is just, I think a lot of liberal talk shows feel like we have to be super serious instead of being entertaining necessarily. And I think what ends up happening is we end up boring our audience to tears in some cases.
If I may, Bob, I'll tell you exactly what the problem is.
All right.
The problem is where in this very male space, you have men competing about who is the smartest, you know, and everybody wants, and here's the thing. Nobody is questioned. You can be intelligent and funny at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And just because you're approaching something with humor doesn't mean that I lack the seriousness to be able to address the issue. And that is taking yourself way too seriously, even though I take the subject matter very seriously.
Right. And sometimes it has to be dosed out. I mean, the only way to get through some of this crap, especially now, is to make fun of it, is to turn it into comedy, and to even sometimes, you know, just throw aside all decorum and just make a fart joke out of it, because sometimes a story needs a fart joke, and that's where it sometimes lands, or I would say often lands on Stephanie's show. So,
she's there for all the fart jokes of all time. Yeah,
that's right. So, you know, there's something in common between Donald Trump and Frangela. And I don't know if you can rewind far enough to know what that is, but all three of you have appeared on NBC reality shows.
That's true.
How did you end up on I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here? And was it everything that it was cracked up to be?
It was worse.
Worse.
I can't even. We refer to it as our own personal Vietnam. And let me tell you something. The best and the brightest got swindled on that one, too. Okay. We did. Let me tell you something, Bob. You have not lived until Stephen Baldwin has dried your panties in the Costa Rican jungle, okay?
Holy God. So, Stephen, you're all there in the Costa Rican jungle, and Stephen Baldwin, how did that end? Okay, you got to tell me how that ended up happening. What happened so that Stephen Baldwin ended up drying your panties in the Costa Rican jungle?
It made so much sense when we were there.
Yeah. But Stephen did all of our laundry in the river. We all had, like, chores.
Right.
Yeah. And Stephen, actually, he's a
picked the latrine.
Yeah.
He cleaned the latrine and he did our laundry.
Yeah.
Amazing. Very, very amazing. He was a very kind man. And he set up a whole rope drying system. And I just remember, I will never forget this moment. And I turned to Angela because he was flapping out my drawers, okay? And daintily, putting them up on the line. I said, and I just turned to Angela, I was like, Stephen Baldwin is drying our panties. It was amazing. We had amazing experiences. Was it worth the threat of constant death? Probably not.
No.
But an amazing memory.
Yeah.
Right. And so was that before or after he just became a complete wingnut, supporting like Sam Brownback and Mike Huckabee and people? These are all people who Stephen Baldwin has supported politically, and those of us.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
not the person we met, which is so interesting because I don't think it was. He was in that, wasn't he?
He was going crazy religious, right, at the time.
But what I tell you, he was so incredibly sweet and kind and never talked about it, never forced it on anybody.
Now,
I don't know what he's about now. I don't know that, but
that's
I can tell you.
The last time we saw him.
That was in the jungle. Exactly. we left our Steven that we knew in the jungle.
He's probably still there wandering around like, hello? Is anyone here?
Totally.
It's
possible because they did not care if we died. They did not care.
But so what happened? The show ended quite rapidly for you. You were out. Which one of you got eliminated at the end of day one? One of you got eliminated, right?
Oh, no. It was we were there for a week. We were there for 2 weeks, but you only saw a week.
Oh, okay. I see.
On TV. So, and then I got eliminated, but I was going home no matter what. let me tell you, I don't camp, Bob. And for me, a bed and breakfast is very close to waterboarding. So the jungle and I were not getting along at all. And, the doctor was doing his best. But, I have really bad allergies. And, I was reacting to everything and not sleeping. So no matter what happened, I was getting out of there that week. The doctors was throwing me home. Because this is the thing, we were, last-minute hires. Something happened with someone. So basically, when we signed up for this, what happened is the producer saw us doing something else that they thought was funny. And it was a week, not even a full week, I think, before people had to go to Costa Rica. And they had this slot open. And they showed us, 30 seconds of somebody paragliding or parasailing or whatever that is. And some of them, the glide things you do.
Right.
Zip line. And they were like, that's pretty good show. We went, okay. Well, that wasn't, we didn't do no kind of parasailing. none.
Jesus. So what happened that, I'm ashamed to say, I never saw the show. Is there some sort of, is it the typical reality show? They vote you out of the show? Is that how that works? Or you just walk out?
They had this really, do you remember? This was really weird. And I actually think this is the problem. I think what they did is you had to vote for people you didn't want.
Yeah.
So what ended up happening, it was very confusing. I remember I didn't understand it. I was like, wait. But it was the audience, I remember that the men, I'll never forget this, John Sally, the men had the ability, they had the ability to keep someone who was going to get voted off if they wanted to, and John Sally was looking at me, and he was pointing at me, and I looked at him, and I said, don't you dare save me, you send me, don't do it.
But it happened.
I am going home. Alive.
Right. So it must have been, so when you actually had to leave, right, it was Angela was eliminated first, right? And then Francis, and then you
I just was I'm not gonna stay here without my best friend, so I left. So they knew that from the beginning. They knew that we would not, if one of us left, we both were leaving.
So Francis left in protest because Angela was eliminated. And I'm sure you were both quite relieved to be done with it, right? Or no?
Oh, yes. Oh, absolutely. Stick with you, Bob. I would not recommend. I think if you get offered a reality show, you should really think about it.
Well, you know what? And this is still earlier in reality TV. What it taught me is that there are things you don't do for money.
Yeah.
There are things you do not do for money. There are things I now know what my bottom is.
And so, I mean, would you ever do something like that again, as long as it wasn't in the, you know, Costa Rican jungle, like something that was maybe set in a house somewhere in Malibu, or, you know what I mean? Like another reality show that wasn't so physically demanding, because it seems like, God, that would be torture to be locked up, or not locked up, but to be just abandoned somewhere in the jungle with Stephen Baldwin.
Exactly.
No. Stephen Baldwin's on the problem. It's Janice Dickinson. That's the problem. So that's the person who I literally. That's the problem. Okay.
Yeah, we woke up one morning and you have not lived until you wake up and Janice Dickinson is naked and her monkey is over your face in the Costa Rican jungle. Okay?
I'm so angry.
Oh my God, Wait, did you say Janice Dickinson had a monkey?
No, her monkey.
She's talking about her lady time.
Her lady time.
Oh, okay.
It's
all right.
Over us.
All right. I thought you were saying Janice Dickinson's monkey. I was like, Janice Dickinson's got a monkey in the jungle. Oh, my God.
Between her legs.
Okay. Now, see, that. I'm glad. You know what? I'm so glad that you clarified, because I've been going around going, boy, Janice Dickinson has a monkey, and she brought it to a reality show, and it was like threatening Frangelo with her monkey and in the jungle. So yeah, well, that's good. That's good to know. So you woke up and she was standing over you, and you saw her vaginal area. Is that what she was doing?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Turned my head, thought I was going to see the morning jungle sun, and that's what I saw.
Oh my God! What the hell was she doing?
Hovering over our cop for reasons that are still unclear to me.
I see. That's what's so weird. I don't know why she would. Why would she do that? Like, hey,
I
look.
When I tell you that you don't know, people always ask us about Spencer and Heidi, or like Stephen Baldwin. But what I try to make clear is, I think the show didn't miss an opportunity in not highlighting the fact that the real problem in that cast was Janice Dickinson.
God.
But like, there was a point where we went to them, because there's a booth, where you go talk to the producers, for your interviews. Mm-hmm. We went in there and they were like, look, we think that the rest of the cast is actively trying to figure out a way to get rid of Janice. And I mean, get rid of her for good. Mm-hmm. Like, you don't understand how much people hate her and how bad it is.
Yeah, it's funny because I'm looking at this, and she was also on the UK version of the show.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
she was that good.
Body, so she doesn't, like, for her, like, I don't think she feels things,
Yeah.
But like, that woman, I swear to you, there are very few people who can get me to the point where I'm like, I really need you to leave me alone. And I literally had to say to her one morning, and I did cuss, and Francis, and I did apologize, because Francis is right, I should apologize. But I did have to say, Janice, I need you to get the fuck out my face. I just need it. I need it. Just do me that solid, please.
So she was just a pain in the ass. Is that it? What was it specifically about her that was just so, I mean, other than, exposing herself just as you're waking up, all I asked for was a cup of coffee when I woke up. I didn't want this as I wake up.
No. She had this habit of I'm going to say it. She would pee next to her cot.
Yeah,
which would attract rats, which would attract snakes. So that they would have to come in the middle of the night and remove the snake.
Yeah, we call them the jungle ninjas. They had this group of, they called them security, but they were more like mercs.
Yeah, they were mercenaries. And they would come in at night and take away the super dangerous snake.
See, this sounds like the greatest television show that I've ever, ever heard of. It's just like Frangela.
All the things that went wrong, they would never show. And that really would have been a better show.
Yes, exactly.
So they were so stuck on their narrative that they just kept missing what was actually really entertaining about the show, which was the dynamic of the cast. And it really did become the cast versus the show.
That's right.
Point.
That's what it sounds like.
And that I thought was amazing. Like, what's his name? Steven's brother. Oh, Danny Baldwin.
Danny Baldwin, he found one of the Jungle Ninjas' hideouts. Because they were everywhere, and you wouldn't see them because they were camoed out and all that.
Jungle
he found
Ninja.
One of their hideouts, and he stole all of his stuff out of the hideout.
Stole the machete and brought it into the camp.
And so then they had to come over to the godmike and be like, look, you have to return the Jungle Ninjas' stuff, or they're going to come in to the camp and get it back. And Daniel Baldwin was like, let them come in. We're ready. I mean, it got like that.
So I wanted to call, the Jungle Ninjas are the snakes or the people on the show who are getting rid of the snakes?
It's the people getting rid of the snakes. It's the mercenaries. They had hired a mercenary detail like Blackwater. We don't know who they were specifically, but they were like military level people, clearly at some point, who were hired to be security in the jungle. So like you'd be walking through the jungle and all, you know, I'd go to like grab a branch or something to steady myself and a hand would come out of nowhere, you know, covered with camo. And you'd look up and see that there's a guy just like dangling from the tree and he would grab your hand and stop you from putting it on this. Like, so
you made me laugh so hard. I yanked my headphones out of the headphone jack. I was laughing so hard. Oh my God,
they
that's
were
the
amazing.
Most. That is the like, funniest
they were
thing.
There to protect us from things that wouldn't be fun to see, like being eaten. But was it a jaguar? What was it? That was no. Was what did they have?
I think it was a. I think there was a puma circling the camp
oh
for
my
a couple
God.
Days.
Wow.
Yeah, and there were howler monkeys.
They were getting closer. Every
you
night.
Could hear them screaming in the trees.
See, what you got to do is you got to get the howler monkeys to defend you from the snakes. And then see there.
Yeah,
see, it's the circle of life. That's what it is. So almost as bad as snakes, I can only assume, would have been Mr. Greg Gutfeld on Red Eye, which you have appeared
you know
on.
What?
Am I being too hard on Greg?
No, not at all.
Okay.
No, this is the thing about Red Eye. You know, they had us, we've been on quite a bit before the election, before Hillary's the first, right?
Was yeah, the first election.
So we were on during a sort of a not politically, you know, hype period of time.
I see.
And it really was pop culture.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But then all of a sudden when the election started, people would, and we weren't in the studio with him. We were here in L.A.
And this is 2008. 2007,
yeah.
2008.
So somebody would say something completely out of nowhere, right? Like we'd be talking about like the Real Housewives, right? And somebody would go, well, you know, Hillary Clinton, and say something ridiculous and untruthful and awful. And then when we tried to say something, they'd cut our mics.
Oh my God.
So we stopped going. You know, that happened once and we were like, we're out.
So and so, you know, I can understand that if you are just a walk-on guest, but if you're part right. of the show and they're cutting your mic, that well, see, of course, it all at once is surprising and not surprising that Fox News would do that.
Well, that's the thing. It's like people have said to us before because our radio show was actually on Clear Channel, and so people have said, did Clear Channel ever try to silence you? I was like, outside of canceling all local programming, it's eventually no. You know, they yeah. never even said. In fact, they, you know, like we filled in for other people. Mm-hmm. In no way did they stand in the way of our content. But once that show, once the elections started happening, gearing up, it, you know, just like, I mean, certainly not to the extent politics are a part of everything we do now. That's when it's like it became a show that wasn't just about pop culture, and it really we have no interest in promulgating or giving voice to retrograde, you know, ideas.
Yeah.
So that and not being allowed to that one time it happened, we were like, that's it. We just can't be on this. So we stopped.
Right, right. And so did you ever end up having any interactions with Mr. Gutfeld himself? Because I've had my run-ins with Greg Gutfeld.
We've never met him in person, just on air, you know, just doing the remote. So we've never, I don't think we've ever spoken to him that when it wasn't being aired.
Right.
Was he at least fair to you on the show?
You know what? Here's the thing. You know, as I've seen him and watched him in recent past, he wasn't like that 10 years ago.
Yeah, I was going to say it wasn't controversial. You know, we're literally talking about just pop culture.
Yeah, I see.
You know, so like at that point, we were literally talking about funny videos or some crazy thing that some celebrity said or did.
Yeah.
So there was no, you know what I mean? I can't even say fair or not fair because it was just a pop culture show.
He's become far more partisan and far more divisive, you know, over the last, I'm going to say 7 to 8 years. You know what I mean?
Right.
Right. But at the time when we were dealing with them, you know, because I've watched it now, I've been like, oh my goodness, what is this? Because the show wasn't like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, we've never spoken to him outside of actually being on air at the time.
Yeah. Well, you know, the unspoken secret about Greg Gutfeld is, strangely enough, he's actually a funny guy. He's not unfunny, and he's smart and clever. He's just using his smartness and cleverness for evil right now. That's going on.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, he had this thing going on in the early days of the Huffington Post where he had where everyone who blogged for the Huffington Post, their byline would link to a pop-up window that would have a bio of that particular blogger. And he used that pop-up window as like a secret blog that he was keeping on the Huffington Post without the Huffington Post even knowing about it. And even though he and I got into it on several occasions in the comments on Huffington Post, I still thought that it was a funny idea. And I still thought that the content of his secret blog was funny. So even though I wouldn't cross the street to piss on his shoe, I think, I would still have to say that it, at least on some level, that he's not unfunny. And I don't know if you had that same impression, but.
Yeah, no, like I said, like I haven't watched the show. I'll be honest. I didn't watch the show we were on it. Right.
Right. Well, there you go. And that would have been the only reason to watch it ever, I think, because the both of you were on
that.
Yeah,
so I haven't since. So, yeah, I don't know. But it doesn't totally surprise me to hear it.
Yeah. Well, you know, speaking of wing nuts and Trump supporters and so on, even though I don't think he's a full-on Trump supporter, this guy Ben Shapiro, I don't know if you know Ben Shapiro.
Oh, yeah.
Yesterday on Twitter, he blamed Barack Obama for the rise of Donald Trump. Once again, Republicans scapegoating all of America's problems on black people, which is clearly what he was doing. So how do we cut through that antiquated bullshit? In your estimation, how do we get beyond that? How do we shame those people into shutting the fuck up with this nonsense? That somehow
listening to them.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that we spend way too much time trying to understand the inner workings of a fairly amoeba like situation.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a single celled organism. White supremacy. It hasn't changed. It hasn't evolved. In fact, its very tenet is an absolute hatred of change and evolution. So from my point of view, people get to believe what they want to believe. And if there's a percentage of this world that chooses to wrap themselves up in hate and that ideology, then that's what they get to do. What they don't get to do is legislate it and be violent and then threatening to the rest of us. And so I think the more that we don't normalize that, and the more that we don't act like there's something there that's worthy of hearing, then the more that it's just like giving a time out to the five-year-old, you know,
right.
They have nothing new to say. So I don't spend my time worrying about what they're saying. I spend my time worrying about the almost 50% of the country that's not even voting.
Yeah.
You know, like that's where I feel like I want to put my passion, energy, and effort. And hey, I'm all for hearts and minds changing, but what I can do and what is most important to me is policy, legislation, and practice.
Yeah.
And that has nothing to do with people's hearts, you know, or minds. And for me, you know, when people ask me that question, I always go, as a black person, I think that it is time for white people to definitely call it out every single time. And white people with the means and the platforms in which to do so. You know, I can post all I want to. I can talk about Serena being treated unfairly at the U.S. Open. I can talk about this black guy who got shot in his own apartment by a police officer who was on paid leave. I can talk about Ben Shapiro blaming Obama. I can go down about Kaepernick and New Balance being the shoe of now white supremacists.
Yeah.
I can talk about it. But it does not mean as much to people coming out of my mouth.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that's why sometimes hearing it from the other side is often refreshing. And sometimes I feel like I feel like embracing some of these never Trumpers for standing up against all of this crap. The question is, do they keep going after Trump goes away? Do they continue to see the reality of how things actually work around here in this country after Trump is gone? So that's a big question mark in all of this. And you know, one of the questions I tend to ask a lot of people who appear on this show, and especially in this period of time, is how do you cope? How do you unwind? Or how do you, because here's the thing. There's something that I see in common between the both of you and someone like John Oliver. Here's what I love about your work and John Oliver's work. When you're talking about politics, especially, you seem like you're constantly energized. Like this is not getting you down. Like you're not going to tolerate being dragged down. You don't telegraph your exhaustion. You know, it's like one thing with like Jon Stewart when he was on The Daily Show. He would sometimes start the show or start a segment by going, I can't believe I have to deal with this. Instead, you both are like, bring it on. Where you're not going to take any bullshit, and you're not going to let this time of presidential crisis get you down. How do you do that?
Well, you know, we've done a joke or two about it in the past, but we are black women. And I think Angela was talking about today, we are bathed in, you know, you want to find some anger, we can be your anger Sherpa. if you want to find some passion around a topic or situation, come to a black woman, because we've got nothing but oodles and buckets of it.
I think also that from our point of view, like I really, you do have to, and you know what, people can, we have some friends who are highly cynical, but I really do believe that, I've been saying it every chance I get, when we did the Sexy Liberal Tour in Chicago for the panel, Representative Jankowski was on.
Mm-hmm.
Is it Jankowski, am I saying that right? I think so. I think so. But anyway, forgive me if I'm not. But she made the best point. She's like, I think when people look back in history at this period of time, they won't, their first thing that they think of will not be, you know, Donald Trump. It will not be this sort of craziness, this anger, this rage. It will be that this ushered in the most progressive era in American politics.
Yeah.
And ever. And that it ushered in the era where more people became involved in this democratic process than have ever been before. And you see that evidence already with all of the women and black women and brown women and Muslims and Arab Americans and Chinese Americans. You see all these people running for office who would not have before. And people voting who have not before.
Yeah.
And that to me is exciting. And yes, I would have rather we got there in an entirely different way. Okay. Entirely different way.
Right.
But there is that. And the one truth of thing of human history, the one eternal law, is that it changes. People will only put up with an injustice for so long. We always fight back. So that's where I put my faith. It's not hard if you look at the world history to know that this too shall pass. We will win.
Yeah, yeah. And that was certainly the case coming out of the Bush years with the rise of Barack Obama. And it was the silver lining at the end of the day for that really, really dark ride. But who knew it could get even darker with the emergence of Donald Trump. Oh, my God. Well, Frances, Angela, I've taken up way too much of your time already, and you've got a show that's premiering tomorrow. Of course, it'll be, by the time people hear this, it'll be already premiered. But let us know one more time, where can people find Me Time with Frangela?
You can go to MeTimeWithFrangela.com.
Mm-hmm.
You can follow us. You can go, it's Me Time with Frangela on Instagram and Twitter. You can also listen to our podcast, The Final Word.
There you go.
Where you get your podcast as well for some news.
Is that also, is your podcast also on iTunes? You can find it there. Is that in the comedy area?
Oh, yeah, or? Absolutely.
Oh, perfect, perfect.
Well, I know I think you're going to do that actually.
Well, keep staying strong. Keep up with everything that you're doing. Good luck with the show, and thank you for being two of the funniest people on the planet right now.
Oh, thank you, Bob. We love you. We miss you, Bob.
We miss you.
Thank you so much, Frangela. Take it easy.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right. I literally yanked my headphone cable out of the soundboard. They made me laugh so hard. I think it was the combined hilarity of jungle ninjas and anger Sherpas. By the way, you can follow Frangela via Twitter at Frangela Duo and at MeTimeFrangela. Also, www.thefinalwordpodcast.com and on YouTube via their Me Time with Frangela channel. Coming up this week, it's Buzz Burbank on Tuesday, Jen Kirkman on our Wednesday interview show, Jody Hamilton on Thursday, and Kimberly A. Johnson on the Friday after party. Thanks for listening, everybody. Take care. Bye-bye.